Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Although this is not being widely reported, the dockers have refused to load cargo of weapons destined for Saudi Arabia in a clear political statement that they would not want to be complicit with a massacre in Yemen.
That's the voice of Jorge Martí from Hands Off Venezuela. In this week's show, we speak to Jorge about socialism of the 21st century and the opportunities and challenges ahead as the workers struggle against capitalist policies. So stay tuned.
You are listening to Latin Waves. I'm your host, Sylvia Richardson. I'm very privileged this morning to be joined by Jorge Martí. He is the Secretariat of Hands Off Venezuela. Thank you for being with us, Jorge.
It's a pleasure to be with you, as always.
Yesterday, we celebrated the 75th anniversary of D-Day. The irony did not escape me that, you know, that was a war to defeat Nazism. And today we see a rise in right-wing popularism. Can we talk a little bit about the significance of the movements rising?
First of all, a couple of clarifications. And one is that yesterday it was the 75th anniversary of D-Day, the landing in Normandy. And the whole of the Western media made a huge thing about this anniversary, as if this was the decisive place where Hitler was defeated, where Nazism was defeated, when in reality the Allies just waited in the hope and delayed this land invasion in the hope that Hitler and the Soviet Union would fight each other off. And once they were both exhausted, then there will be a land invasion by the Allies. When in reality what happened was that the Soviet Union defeated Nazism, and the Soviet Union was advancing very fast over Europe, and that's what precipitated D-Day, the fact that the Allies didn't want to meet the Soviet Union in Calais or in the border of Spain, but rather they wanted to keep control of at least part of Europe. That's the first thing that wasn't very clear from the whole coverage of the anniversary yesterday. The second thing, the second point that you're making is about the rise of far-right demagogues and reactionary politicians today in the form of Donald Trump in the United States, Bolsonaro in Brazil, the League in Italy, the far-right in Austria, Hungary, and other countries. And first of all, I think that we need to have a certain sense of proportion. Yes, these are right-wing reactionary politicians, and their policies and statements are abhorrent. They promote racism, xenophobia. They try to divide the workers according to their place of origin between immigrant and native workers, as if the interests were somehow different, or as if immigrants were at fault for austerity policies and cuts in social spending and so on, uphold discrimination against women, discrimination against homosexuals. These are really reactionary politicians that must be combated. But when I say we have to have a certain sense of proportion, is that in reality, there is no direct comparison, in my opinion, between these politicians and Nazism or fascism in the 1930s and 40s. Fascism came to power first in Italy and then in Germany and other countries on the basis of the physical destruction of the working class organizations. When Mussolini came to power in Italy in the 1920s, he had a long march to Rome. And on the way, his armed fascist gangs destroyed the workers' organizations. They went into the offices of the Socialist Party and the trade unions. They killed people. They destroyed property and so on. And same in Germany. Hitler, even before he came to power, he had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of armed thugs recruited from the most reactionary elements of society. And they physically destroyed the workers' movement. we are very far from a situation like this. Take, for instance, Brazil. Yes, Bolsonaro was elected in October, November, at the end of last year, and he took office in January. But already he is very unpopular. The number of people who think that his presidency is negative is now growing and is now much higher than those who think his presidency is positive. There has been already a huge movement of students and teachers against cuts in education spending in Brazil, which gathered about 2 million people on the streets about 3 weeks ago. And then on the 30th of May, there was another big demonstration against cuts in education with about 1 million people in dozens of different cities in Brazil. And now, on the 14th of June, there's going to be a general strike against the pensions counter-reform that Bolsonaro government is trying to implement. His government is weak, divided, internally divided, and is increasingly unpopular. And the organizations of the workers' movement, the organizations of the youth, have not been destroyed. They are basically intact, and they are now starting to fight back against this situation. So that's why I'm saying that we should have a certain sense of proportion. Yes, these are reactionary politicians, but what we're witnessing now is not the rise of fascism and the smashing of the workers' organizations, but rather on an anti-establishment reaction against the fact that for a long period of time, all politicians in power were carrying out more or less the same policies, whether they call themselves social democratic or socialist, like in the case of the governments of Lula and Dilma in Brazil, or the government of Tony Blair in Britain, or whether they were openly right-wing politicians. They basically carried out the same policies of austerity, cuts against social spending, foreign military adventures, imperialist military adventures. And so a lot of people became very disillusioned with these governments and policies. And in a distorted way, the rise of power to these politicians is a distorted and reactionary expression of that. In the US, for instance, you had Trump facing off to Clinton, and Clinton represented the establishment, represented policies which were basically not fundamentally different from those which are being introduced by Trump. For instance, policies against migrants, policies of against healthcare for all, policies against education for all, policies against housing, policies basically in favor of the ruling class, and policies of foreign military imperialist intervention. If Trump had been opposed to Sanders in the presidential election, it's clear that Sanders will have won, that there is a huge constituency for left-wing socialist policies in the United States today. So the situation shouldn't be seen as one of dark reaction or the increase of a reactionary wave. Yes, these reactionary politicians have come to power in a number of countries, but at the same time, this shows an extreme polarization of society. And on the other side of the political spectrum, we see the rise of left-wing politicians of one denomination or another, clearer or not so clear programs, but which in a way reflect the search for an alternative, in this case, an alternative to the left, an alternative against capitalism, for socialism, for a system that is able to guarantee basic human rights and living standards for the majority of working people, rather than serving the interests of the unelected few at the top.
Can we talk a little bit about then the social movements that are invisibilized deliberately, perhaps, by the media, by the corporate media?
Yeah, this links very well with your previous question as well, because, for instance, take France. In France, during the recent European elections, the far right won. Marine Le Pen, the candidate of the National Rally, got 24% of the votes, or 23.5%, something like this. And she beat the current president, Macron. Macron, who was presented just 2 or 3 years ago as the leading light of liberalism, the fight against extremism and so on, has been in power now for 3 years. And he won the presidential election in the second round with a big majority. But at the same time, his own vote was not so high. He thought that he had a mandate to implement his liberal reforms, as he calls it. In reality, this is a program of massive attacks against the working people in terms of working conditions, trade union rights, taxes on the poor, and so on. And immediately, as he was elected, he created a massive backlash, an enormous movement, in this case, the movement of the Yellow Vest, a movement that's been going on now for 9 months, which has faced enormous police repression. We have to remember that in France, there are still emergency laws in place from the more recent terrorist attacks. So the state has used these laws to brutally repress this movement of the Yellow Vests. Dozens of people have lost an eye or a limb in the brutal police repression. Demonstrations in many cases have been banned. And despite this, the demonstrators are still on the streets every Saturday for the last 9 months, protesting against the policies of this government and questioning not just one policy, which is what sparked the movement 9 months ago, the policy of increasing fuel tax on the poor people, but questioning the whole of the system. So in reality, it's not so much that Marine Le Pen and the far right won the recent European election. They basically got more or less the same votes as they got last time, a little bit less. But it's more a question of Macron has decisively lost this election. He even said this is like a plebiscite on the basis of the ideas of Europe, which he describes as solidarity and this and that. But in reality, the European Union has nothing to do with solidarity. The European Union has policies which are clear against migrants, policies of fiscal austerity, cuts in social spending. The European Union was responsible for the crushing of the Syriza government in Greece, where people had voted decisively against austerity policies. And so people are not very enthusiastic to vote for the European Union. There was a massive abstention in this European election in France and in many other countries. People are not interested in electing people to a European Parliament which has no real power, no democratic accountability. And so we see movements like this, movements like the Yellow Vests, which are not particularly politically aligned, but reflect a deep desire to change fundamentally everything. We also see the limitations of such movements. For instance, in Spain, in 2011, we saw the movement of the Indignados, a movement which lasted for 2 or 3 years, mass protests against cuts in education, against cuts in healthcare spending, against the eviction of people from their homes by the banks when they can't pay for their mortgages, for mortgage repayments. And this was a movement that involved millions of people. And amongst their slogans, we are not commodities at the hands of the markets. It was a questioning of the whole of the capitalist system. And also of bourgeois democracy. The other slogan of the Indignados was, they do not represent us. These people in power, the MPs, the governments, they elected every 4 years, but they do not really represent the interests of ordinary working people. Now, that movement died down inevitably because it's impossible to have millions of people on the streets on an indefinite basis. The certain tiredness sets in. Some results are achieved, some people become disillusioned with the movement. But then this movement translated into a powerful electoral movement in the form of Podemos, and then Unidos Podemos, Yes We Can, or United We Can, which transformed the political scenario in Spain, making inroads in the European elections, in the general, in the national election, in running several important local council town halls. But also now we have seen the limitations of that. If you attempt to manage the crisis of capitalism, you will end up being forced to make decisions that are not very popular. And many people have now realized the limitations of this. I think that in Spain, what we are seeing is the preparation of a new wave, a new cycle of mass mobilization on the streets. In the last 2 years, for instance, we've had what they call a feminist strike, i.e. on the International Working Women's Day, 8th of March, there's been a national strike this year and last year involving millions of people, women and also men, above all the youth, against discrimination on women, against violence on women, but more generally against this system of oppression and exploitation. We have also seen a massive movement of the pensioners against decisions of the government that basically destroy the purchasing power of pensions. And this movement still continues, involving hundreds of thousands of people. And even if you take it from a more general point of view, we saw the Arab Spring in 2011 overthrow a number of oppressive regimes in Egypt, for instance, in Tunisia, but then becoming bogged down into civil wars in Libya and Syria. And it seems now that there is a new wave of the Arab Spring with the revolutions in Sudan and in Algeria. In Algeria, they managed to force the overthrow of the regime, and they're still fighting over whether there's going to be new elections or not. In Sudan, we now see in the last few days an offensive of counter-revolution, but also a revolutionary movement that had forced the overthrow of two or three different regimes in just the space of a few days. So there is this contradiction. On the one hand, you see the power of the masses when they start to move. You see a general trend towards left-wing policies, towards the questioning of the capitalist system as a whole, people looking for a socialist alternative. Even in the United States, where the word socialism has now become very popular, it's no longer a dirty word as it was in the past. But at the same time, you see the limitations of this movement. This movement doesn't yet have clear ideas about what is the alternative, how to win a victory, how to overthrow the capitalist system. These movements are created not by activists with clear ideas, but rather by the feeling by millions of people that this system is not working. The capitalism can't provide, that bourgeois democracy is not genuinely representative. And I think that this is a very interesting time in history that we are living through, where, as I say, millions of people are questioning the validity of capitalism. On the basis of this, we can build a genuine and powerful revolutionary movement to sweep the old society to one side once and for all.
So let's talk a little bit about what this means then, because while we are convinced we have experienced the crisis of capitalism, we are certain we need to transform that system. What is socialism? Because we have seen a brief example in the Venezuelan transition, you know, a process in progress. Can we talk a little bit what this what are theorizing of socialism ought to include, and how is it activated, you know?
Yes, this is clear that the Venezuelan Revolution provided a glimpse of what is possible when you use the resources that are already available in the benefit of the majority of the population in terms of the massive advances that took place in Venezuela in terms of healthcare provision, a free education for all, housing. 2 million houses have been built and delivered to families in need in just a short space of time. But obviously, Venezuela also showed the limitations of carrying out only half a revolution. In reality, in Venezuela, there was never socialism. There was a lot of talk and struggle for socialism, but socialism was never implemented in the sense that the economy, large sectors of key strategic parts of the economy were left in private hands. And in reality, socialism can only work on the basis of the common ownership of the means of production, that is, the banks, the land, and the main factories. We're not talking about nationalizing your street corner shop or your small business, but the means of production, the commanding heights of the economy. The handful of big multinational corporations that control the overwhelming majority of world trade and production, and therefore decide over the lives of millions of people without ever being elected by anyone. This is one of the main, in my opinion, one of the main pillars of socialism, the common ownership of the means of production, which then have to be planned in a democratic way. Socialism has little to do with the Stalinist model of bureaucratic planning. but rather democratic planning. Either the people themselves, the working class, which is the producer of all goods. Even when you look at this climate change crisis or emergency, you can see that there is a handful of companies at the top that are creating most of the harmful emissions that are damaging the environment. And the reason they are doing it is not because they are evil, though some of them are very evil, but the reason they are doing it is because in this way they maximize profit. Capitalism is a system that is based on the profit, private profit, in the short term for a small minority of the owners of the means of production, the CEOs of the big multinationals and the shareholders of these companies. Instead, they don't care about any side consequences to the environment, to anything else. A system, a socialist system, in which the means of production and change will be in the hands of the majority and will democratically run and plan for the interest of the majority, will take into account the question that we only have one planet. At the moment, we still don't have the necessary technical means to move to another planet, so we only have this one. And the resources of this planet are the ones that we have.
Can we talk a little bit about what the urgency is for us to not only be engaged in what happens in places like Venezuela, Cuba, you know, in places where they have planted tiny seeds, perhaps, of what a socialist society could do for its people when not only the resources, but the care of the people is of primary concern for the government and for everyone in the community?
Yes, I think that it is true that neoliberalism, i.e. capitalism in its phase of crisis, which started, let's say, in the 1980s, 1990s, the implementation of hard monetarist policies by capitalist governments all over the world was predicated on the basis of defeats, important defeats of the workers' movement in the previous period. In Britain, we had the defeat of the miners' strike in 85. In the US, the defeat of the air traffic controllers in 81, the coming to power of Reagan and Thatcher. The collapse of Stalinism in the Soviet Union also damaged the idea of socialism as an alternative. And this idea was created that there is no alternative, that this system is better or worse, but is the only one that is possible. And I think that this is now being challenged as well, starting in the financial crisis of 2008, which was the beginning of another wave of capitalist crisis, from which we haven't yet come out. There was an increasing questioning of capitalism. And this became accompanied with the idea that socialism somehow is the alternative. For instance, in the United States, you have politicians like Sanders, who, for all his limitations, he calls himself a socialist, and he has the following of millions of people. The word socialism is no longer a dirty word. Here in Britain, we have Jeremy Corbyn, who calls himself a socialist as well. And he is extremely popular. He's won the internal leadership elections in the Labour Party twice. He's managed to get 300,000 or 400,000 people to join the Labour Party. So I think that the situation is or has already started to change. And yes, you talked about increased state surveillance, repression, and so on. This is all true, but it also shows in a different way. It also shows the fact that the ruling class is afraid. If they weren't afraid, they wouldn't have to use these repressive methods. So obviously they're using the weapons at their disposal. We need to use the weapons at our disposal. And this is collective organization, the common action, the power of the working class. Just to give you a couple of examples, there has been, for now over a year or more, a wave of teachers' strikes in the United States, in a whole series of different states, in Ohio, in Seattle, in a whole number of places in West Virginia. Teachers, starting from the rank and file, in some cases against the wishes or bypassing their own organizations, have gotten organized and have gone on strike in Los Angeles as well. And they have, in most cases, achieved victories in terms of conditions, wages, and so on, and defense of state education. That is the way forward, mass action, organized and led from below. Another more recent example has been the attempt of Saudi Arabia to purchase weapons from different European countries, which has been blocked by the actions of the dock workers, the longshoremen, in the harbors of Le Havre, in the north of France, in Marseille, in the south of France, and in Genova, in Italy. In these three ports over the last month, although this is not being widely reported, the dockers have refused to load cargo of weapons destined for Saudi Arabia in a clear political statement that they do not want to be complicit with the massacre in Yemen, which has been carried out by Saudi Arabia with the support of the Western powers. This is a concrete example that shows the power of the working class when it starts to move. And these examples can be replicated elsewhere. For instance, we have seen over the last few years attempts to organize one of the most exploited sections of workers in advanced capitalist countries, that is the couriers, the people who deliver food to your homes through services like Uber, Deliveroo, Glovo, and other multinationals. Basically, these people, they don't even have a labor relationship with the company they work for. Most of them, they're supposed to be technically self-employed or partners of these companies, but now they've gotten themselves organized. They want recognition that they are workers. They want recognition that they should have paid holidays. They should have sick pay, and that they should have trade union rights. And in most cases, in many cases, these are immigrant workers, in some cases undocumented immigrant workers. After a while, they've said enough is enough. We're getting organized. We are fighting together, taking collective action. And in some places, they've won some small victories in Britain, in Spain, Belgium, and in other parts. Now they're starting to organize also in Canada, I've seen. There is this general spirit. If we organize, we can change things. It doesn't mean that we always will achieve victories, but the very process of collective organization will make people realize their own power, the power of the working class in a capitalist society. And this is really the way forward.
Thank you so much for being with us today. How can people access your work, and how could they learn more about the work you do?
Yeah, I will say that the defense of the Bolivarian Revolution against imperialist intervention is one key factor of what we should be doing now. And we have a website called handsofvenezuela.org. That is handsofvenezuela, altogether, .org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.